Selena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest. Mm-hmm. How have you been, dear?
I've been okay.
How excited are you to be talking about this episode?
I am so excited. I love this episode.
I've been waiting for this episode for months.
It's a good episode. There's a lot that happens. It's one that's definitely like, question some things in the timeline of the show about where it falls and how things are, but yeah. Love this episode.
There's one thing in particular that I think you're talking about. I'll be excited to get there.
Yeah. I think hopefully it's the same thing we're talking about.
The more confident you are, the less confident I am.
Oh, well, we'll see. I don't know.
So yes,
to be determined.
So yes, we are here to talk about episode 17 of the first season.
Why does it make you less confident? Is it because I'm usually
we're
wrong?
Always like ships in the night. We would be so bad at like the newlywed game or something. The more sure you are of something, the less sure I am of it. It's an inverse relationship.
So I was going to say, are you trying to say I'm probably wrong?
I'm trying to say that if you're really sure we agree on something, I become less sure
okay.
We agree on something.
Okay.
I'm saying exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
Episode 17 of the first season of SeaQuest DSV, The Stinger.
Yeah.
The screenplay by John J. Sackmar and Carrie Leonard, the writing team that brought us Sea West and Give Me Liberté. From a story by Sackmar and David J. Burke, who wrote Greed for Pyre's Dream and The Regulator, and Patrick Hasberg, who did just the previous episode, Whale Song.
Mm.
So, yeah, all the writer-producers, almost all of the writer-producers are collaborating on this one.
Why so many? Why?
There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen on this one.
Yeah.
Directed by Jonathan Sanger, making his SeaQuest debut. In 1988, he won an Oscar for live-action short.
Oh.
That means he has the same Oscar as Peter Capaldi.
Oh, okay.
But different years.
Okay.
Jonathan Sanger is more of a producer than a director, if you count up his credits.
Okay.
Producing such films as The Elephant Man, Flight of the Navigator,
Vanilla
Sky, and NSYNC, Bigger Than Live.
I totally saw that.
Yeah.
I went to an IMAX to see that. We drove we drove down to Greenfield Village because that was the only IMAX.
Yeah. At the Henry Ford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the only IMAX in the entire part of the state.
Yeah.
And so we went down there to see the NSYNC movie.
I think it was probably a nature documentary or something. Nothing as fun as NSYNC Better Than Live.
I wore my NSYNC concert t-shirt.
Well, you were going to an NSYNC concert film.
Yeah. It was great. I have pictures. And then, I only know this because of the pictures of the day. Because we took a picture of me with, like, the poster at the IMAX.
Sure.
We then went to, I think it was the Michigan State Fair.
Uh-huh.
And I saw LFO.
I really thought you were going to say elephants. And
no,
you were so excited.
No, I saw LFO in concert. In my NSYNC shirt after watching the NSYNC IMAX. It was like
that was
pure
the day
perfection.
Of boy bands. Yes. It's a good thing.
I want to relive that.
Those were the days.
Those are the days. Man.
You know what was on TV then? Not SeaQuest,
no.
Except maybe in syndication.
It was in syndication because I was watching it in syndication at that point in my life.
It was a late 90s event and where this is a mid-90s.
Yeah.
Program, but still this episode begins with something that SeaQuest is going to do for a while in the next stretch,
but it is the first time it happens.
Yes.
Which is on like today's episode of SeaQuest, and then we get a summary of the episode.
It kicks off with a trailer for itself.
It's weird.
I have to assume that the idea is to just hook viewers quick to try to take advantage of their new lead-in beginning in the new year, the NBA on NBC.
Yes.
People who are watching the Sunday night game need this hook to be like, don't switch a channel. You're going to like this.
Yeah, because yeah. I mean, that was how they would, you wouldn't go to a commercial break. You'd go like directly into it type
mm-hmm,
thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fucking weird on the DVD and Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I don't know why we had to include that. It's odd. I want to know if they include that on the streaming platforms.
That's a good question. If you watch on Peacock, do you see on tonight's Sequest? And then suddenly a teenager is in danger.
Yes.
And this is going to make you not switch over to Murder, She Wrote or Lois and Clark, the New Adventures of Superman.
Just be like, that's a cute teenager.
Yeah.
Let's watch him be in danger.
I want to watch him in horrible peril.
When we actually get to the episode,
we get
a nice montage of seals diving in the water.
Mm-hmm. Navy seals, the creatures.
The creatures. We haven't had seals before. We get a lot of whales, we get a lot of waves.
Yeah, yeah.
Fish.
A lot of, like, fully marine mammals, not the pinniped representation.
Yeah, yeah.
Until now.
I kind of don't know why we focus on seals, because we don't do anything else with seals the entire episode.
No!
And a lot of times it's kind of connected.
Like, this episode...
Or they mention, like, if they show whales, they're like, we saw a pod of whales.
Yeah, and maybe Maximilian Scully shows up, and we know how that goes. But yeah, it's the beginning and the end of the seals.
You know what they should have shown?
What should have they shown?
Stingrays.
You should have shown maybe some sort of large sport fish.
Manta rays.
Most of a dolphin.
They mention barracudas in this episode.
Do.
They could have shown barracudas.
False barracudas.
They could have showed real barracudas. You know what?
And
no one would have watched.
You would have turned off the channel.
Yes, because those fuckers are terrifying.
You would have said, "Ah, oh, this is the week where I finally figure out what's going on with this Lois and Clark, and what do they have to do with Superman?"
No, I wouldn't have.
No,
no,
okay.
No. But so we have a sea crab. Out there in the water,
mm-hmm.
and we get a very fun sea crab set.
You like the sea crab?
I like the sea crab. I mean, we've had the sea crab before,
mm-hmm.
but like this is like, we spend a lot of time in the sea crab.
This is a deluxe two-seater sea crab.
Yes, it's fancy.
Yeah.
I like it.
And those two seats are occupied by Captain Nathan Bridger and Katie Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm. They are out there monitoring the TESS. The titular stinger. It is a little watercraft that looks like a dolphin.
It looks like a sport fish.
Looks like a sport
and
fish.
And a dolphin. Smooshed together, yeah.
They had a baby.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a single person, very speedy, like, it's the convertible of, like, watercraft.
Yeah,
submarine.
It is a high-speed submarine that Lucas is taking out on a test drive, putting it through its paces.
Yes.
Being monitored by Hitchcock and Bridger.
Yes.
And he is so excited.
He's so excited. He is bouncing in his seat
when they tell him to do a flat-out speed test.
He is doing so many woos.
He's whooping it up.
Woo!
As soon as I write down that he is hot-dogging, Bridger says,
"Stop
hey,
hot-dogging.
Lucas, stop hot-dogging." And I say, "Hey, that's my word, old man. Am I an old man? Oh, no. Oh, no."
You might be. He might be getting to the old man stage, I'm sorry to say. It's okay, though.
It's okay to be an old man?
Well, I mean, you're getting to, like, the salt and pepper coming in.
Mm-hmm,
and that's when everyone's like, oh, man, you're hot.
You like the streaks in my beard.
I do, and I'm saying other people do as well.
Okay,
they're like,
all right.
It's fine wine.
I'm really more of a grape juice boy.
Yeah, you are, actually. You're the grape juice. I'm the wine.
Can I just have ice water and Coke?
Yep. Yep. And I'm like, give me beer. He's out there. He's test driving it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The thing can apparently go up to 150. And Lucas is like, let's go. Let's do this. And Bridger's like, absolutely not.
We never get units. They never say 150 what? Is it miles an hour? Is it kilometers an hour? Is it knots? It could be a lot of... It's 150 something, and that sounds like a lot.
Something. Well, and apparently the speedometer's off, because Lucas is seeing, like, 90-something, and Hitchcock's like, I'm seeing, like, 105, mm-hmm. and which I think is funny when they're like, okay, Captain said you can go to 120, Lucas, and I'm like, really? That's going to be 130, because he's going to see 120, and you're going to see 130. And
well, that's how they get you.
So who's 120 are we talking about? Lucas's 120 or your 120?
Mm-hmm.
I have questions. I guess if he doesn't ask the question, he can just, like, there go to 120 go. And it's there really 130. And
it's
like,
a loophole.
Oh, I didn't know. Yeah.
It's a loopy loophole with the way he's
loophole.
He's flying this thing around, swimming it.
Yeah.
So the thing about the Stinger that makes it incredibly exciting that you see as it's zooming around is that the tail wiggles.
Tail wiggles.
The tail is not just a stabilizer fin. It just
wiggles its butt.
It approximates and replicates the swimming of a large fish. And this is a revolutionary design feature for speed and control and cutting down turbulence and efficiency. This is the breakthrough that Hitchcock and Lucas have done together.
Yes. And while we are watching Lucas do this, we're going to cut away and we're going to have some very ominous music.
Yes.
Because there's a man in a dinghy.
And he has a chunky handheld radar tablet.
Oh!
We love chunky handheld radar tablets these days.
And then what is that up there on the shore? That is a semi with a radar satellite thing.
Yes, big old mobile surveillance truck. Interesting,
and
interesting.
And then we go inside and they're all like, we just want to disable it.
There's dudes in there.
So, like, let's hit it. But only disable it. Mm-hmm. Don't blow it up. We want the tech.
So anyway, Lucas gets shot by an underwater tank.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he goes spinning and screaming and flying off. And Bridger and Hitchcock are, like, in, you know, shock.
Yes. Because
Lucas might have just died. And then we get the credits.
So the camera on Lucas, the camera that's, like, on the cockpit of this submersible.
Yeah.
Is spinning around. It looks like Lucas is in, like, the washing machine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Whereas the heads-up display of the Stinger on Westphalen and Bridger's, like, readout.
Not Westphalen.
Yeah.
Hitchcock and Bridger.
Hitchcock and Bridger's
is
readout.
Spinning head over heel.
It's breakdancing?
Or something?
It's breakdancing.
Yeah. So after our lovely, lovely opening credits, we come back and they do not know where the Stinger is.
The Stinger's missing. More than that, the boy is missing. They don't know where Lucas is.
They do not know where it ended up. There is no debris trail that the whiskers are picking up, which means it, you know, did it at least explode.
And Hitchcock ominously says, it's heavy. If it's not moving, it sinks.
But then we, as they're sending everything out to, like, go look, the whiskers, the shuttles, like, everyone's searching for them. We cut to Lucas, who is floating on the water surface with his life vest. And Dinghy Man is coming to rescue him.
Yes, yes.
Pulls him out. Lots of grunting. pulls him onto shore.
Activates the little radar ping on his light vest. And starts applying first aid to Lucas on the beach.
Yes. And he's like, don't worry, people will be here soon. You're fine. And he decides to go get his fancy-ass metal briefcase and leave. And Lucas is like, wait! Who are you? And he's like, oh, I'm a dreamer, son. Just like you. And then walks away.
Yeah, let me just abandon the wounded child real quick.
You're definitely dreaming right now. You got brain trauma.
Lucas seems to be, like, at least 3/4 unconscious. And he's just like, yeah, you can keep pressure on that head wound, right, kid? Okay, bye.
What a great man!
He's acting like he has outstanding warrants.
Very suspicious. The Sequest gets the ping from it, and they go out to get him, and they bring him back. and he is in med bay getting fixed up by Wes Phelan.
He's got those cool
butterfly band-aids on his cheeks.
Yeah.
Cheek cut. And he's like, oh, is it gonna scar? And Wes Phelan's like, no, you'll still have your baby face. He's like, I don't want a baby face. I want a scar. And Bridger's like, oh, next he's going to want a tattoo. He's like, I'm going to get a tattoo.
I want a tattoo.
And we know what tattoo he's going to get. We have talked about this.
Yes.
Here's the thing. The more you push for someone not to get a tattoo, they're probably going to end up getting tattoos.
Hi, Aunt Shelley. Hi. I hope you're enjoying the show, Aunt Shelley.
Your aunt loves me and hates me. I'm a bad influence on her daughter by being like, wow, I really like your art. I would get that tattooed. And that got me slapped at Christmas. And I'm like, I'm not telling your 20-year-old to get the tattoo. I'm saying, I want the tattoo. Why do I get slapped? Why?
Oh boy, oh boy. But
it is unfortunate that this is the aunt that I go hiking with in the wilderness.
All alone, isolated.
I have to strategically plan if I get that tattoo to be after our next hike, so that way she doesn't murder me and leave me in the woods.
Well, if she murdered you, who would tell her that it's time to eat a snack?
This is true.
She wouldn't make it out without you.
It's okay to stop and pee on our 20-mile hike. Yeah.
Anyhow, in this scene, the mom side of Wes Phelan really comes out here.
Yes.
Lines like, quote, he had no right running around in that contraption.
He's just a boy,
He's
Nathan.
He's just a boy, Nathan.
And I love Bridger in this episode so much because he's got so much sass.
He's
a sassy man in this. And he's like, boy, he's a college graduate. As he looks at Lucas like, you fucked up. You're gonna hot dog again? You're gonna do the shit?
His, like, parental side really only comes out with Wes Phelan in this episode in their bickering.
Yeah.
When it's turned to Lucas, it's much more of the like, mentor figure and even the captain of the ship.
Yes.
He's not being foster dad to Lucas.
No.
But he is being foster dad when he's, like, sniping at Wes Phelan.
Yes. Yes. Just love this. I love it. I love it so much. Well, there, you know, he's of course like, where's the stinger?
Mm-hmm.
You know, have we found it? And Hitchcock's like, that's not its name. Its name's the gazelle.
Their collaboration is tense. There is tension.
Yes, because they have built this thing. They have worked on this thing. And they do not agree on a name at all. And Bridger is like, well, I paid for the thing. It's right now the contraption.
Yeah.
Which shuts both of them up.
Mm-hmm,
and I love it. Lucas is ordered not to give the doctor any trouble as Bridger goes off to, you know, do captainy things.
And they talk a little bit about, like, his rescue.
Mm-hmm.
The assumption is that the guy in a boat that pulled him to shore was a fisherman, naturally. And he's like, no, he's not a fisherman. He said he's a dreamer. As we all know, fishermen have no dreams.
Nope.
They don't even sleep.
No, that's for the lighthouse keepers.
They don't have anything to do but dream, and it's usually dreams that drive them mad. You wind up doing some weird things with Willem Dafoe out there.
I want to see that. I want to see that movie. So, Krieg, Ortiz, and O'Neill are out in a launch looking for the stinger. O'Neill is just listing off all the ways Krieg has fucked up at driving.
Because he says, well, they should have let me drive it.
And he's like, oh, but what about that one time you backed the Sequest into a volcano?
The first time he took the helm, he backed up into an uncharted volcano.
And like,
it's charted now. That's Krieg's volcano.
And her whole list of ones. And
they
Krieg
don't even mention the poopy sea monster.
No.
The one we've seen.
But Krieg, like, you know, has a reason behind all of it. Like, oh, well, that one, there was a tsunami. Oh, well, that one, it was because of, you know, a mutiny or something. Like,
that's an episode I want to see.
Same mutiny. But, you know, he has just a comeback for all of them.
He has a nickname. He's known as Crash Krieg.
No, Krieg Gang. Krieg Gang.
O'Neill is no member of the Krieg gang, let me tell you.
No. So, they get to where the stinger should be.
You know how they can tell where it's at?
A dip?
A dip? A groove? What else white me call that?
A trench?
A trench?
It's a tiny trench.
It's a tiny trench, but they love a trench.
It's a pothole.
They love a trench so much, even the tiniest trench is dear to them, precious to them.
A trough? Trough? What was my one last time? A trough, yeah. It wouldn't be a trough. They're smaller.
I don't think they discriminate.
Okay.
These are honorable men who know that size doesn't matter.
That's what they tell themselves.
O'Neill sure does.
So,
he's got a very clever tongue. The man knows like 14 languages.
Yeah, he just leaves off the part about it being from the languages is why it's so clever.
Anyhow, the trench, small and recent as it may be, leads off to the shallows. So Krieg and Ortiz scuba to follow.
Yes. And so back on the Sequest, Ford does go have a little chat with Hitchcock.
Yes.
About the gazelle. Mm-hmm, she is quick to remind him.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, like, hang in there, kid. We're gonna find it.
This is the scene where we find out that this is just the two of them. This is just a Hitchcock and Lucas special. Which means they did not include the designer of the world's greatest submarine in their submarine design competition.
Yeah.
Seems an odd choice.
Well, they don't want to ride on his coattail.
They ride in his boat.
He gave the money.
He did. He scrounged up some appropriations.
So Wes, Phelan, Bridger, and Lucas are looking at graphs of how the stinger moves. This is where we talk about, you know, it moving like a fish.
Laminar flow.
Yeah. Ah. And Lucas is all like, I designed it. And Bridger's like, no, you did it. It's fish.
God designed it. You used it. There's a difference.
And so they talk a little bit about, like, well, the question is, though, like, why didn't this work? Why did it fail? Why did you crash? Bridger calls them out on the fact, like, you guys wouldn't let me get involved. Yeah, I cannot help. I don't know what you were doing. I can't tell you why you fucked up.
They wanted him at arm's length. They don't want to be in the shadow of daddy.
So Krieg and Ortiz make it to shore.
Yes.
And, the stinger is not there. And Krieg calls the Sequest and is like, hey, there is evidence here that the stinger was dragged from the water and dragged off the beach and taken away. It is gone. Someone stole it.
Someone stole their ship. Lucas was rescued by someone not with a tackle box, but with some sort of unseen technical contraptions. So this is looking like sabotage.
Yes. So Bridger...
As the French would say.
So Bridger... decides to call up the UEO because this is being developed as part of a UEO competition to get a contract to design and build something like the Stinger.
Yes.
Single
capacity, super fast, super maneuverable.
Yes. And so Bridger wants to get, like, who else is in this competition? Because therefore, it's confidential right now. Yes. It's secret.
And the other competitors are the people who would have the motivation to do this sabotage, as the French would say.
But the UEO dude's like, nope, not gonna tell you. Not gonna tell you who it is. Can't tell you. And he's like, well, we know who one other of the people are. And he's like, yeah, they decided to spill the beans themselves, but, like, I'm not telling
and
you.
And I'm very frustrated at them, Mr. Bridger.
So Bridger's like, well, fine. Then I want to talk to Noyce. Let me talk to Noyce. And the dude's like, no. Everyone wants to talk to him. No.
And I'm, look, all those other competitors, the one you know the name of, I'm not letting them talk to Noyce either. It's all fair, all above board. Unless it's a military emergency, you don't get to talk to the Secretary General. There's a change. Darling, you were right. This is the thing that's clearly out of order. I was thinking about
too. Yes! This should not happen!
We won the newlywed game! Yay!
two episodes from now, that episode needs to happen before this episode. Because he's still the admiral there. He's not this.
He eventually shows up in a suit, not a uniform. It's a different job. He's a different, yeah.
This, and I went and checked. I went and checked the production, like, film stuff.
Yeah.
And these are filmed out of order. Where the other one was filmed before this. Where has a very important plot point that makes him the Secretary General. But apparently we don't care about that in when we're going to air them order.
Sure, sure. We need to have everyone watching the Knicks know that a kid blows up this week.
No explanation. Mm-hmm. No explanation at all. Just like, ah, yes, he's someone else now. Gonna be like, why can't he talk to his friend? Like, he has a cell phone.
It's like, true. He's called him in his bedroom.
He knows his wife.
He's watched his wife wake up.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing to do.
It's a little strange. So, like, I don't understand. Like, you become the Secretary General and suddenly your friends can't call you? Is that what happens here?
I think that happens in The Expanse, too.
Yeah.
Although it's different because she doesn't have any friends.
She does not have friends.
She has no friends.
She doesn't have friends.
She doesn't even have a husband by the end.
Which is awful because her husband was so good. Love The Expanse, though. Great show. Fucking love that show. Show's better than the books. Books are fine, but go watch The Expanse. I think I said that last time, too.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so the dude hangs up on him. Like, no, we're not gonna talk. So then he's like, hey, pull up the playback of when Lucas was, like, crashing. And so we get a little CGI graph. Hearing just the audio of Lucas spinning out is the funniest fucking shit.
He's doing his best Schwarzenegger impression.
It's so funny!
Get down!
It's so good. It you don't realize it when it's actually happening where you're seeing the action, but as soon as it's removed and you're just getting that audio, it is...
Right, because there's so much other audio design happening
in
the moment. Mm-hmm. All the beeping and the score is swelling. Yeah.
Not here.
No.
And it's something. But while they are watching it, they realize that there was something else out there.
Oh.
There was a bleep on the screen.
They can tell that he was shot. Call back! Call back! Wait, it's a military emergency now.
Look at this. He was shot. He was shot at.
The functionary was like, well, is it a military emergency? It is! It is! Someone is shooting at the government.
So then we get, like, them trying to, like, piece it together, and Lucas brings up again, you know, the dinghy guy, how, you know, he had a case for electronics, not a fishing tackle box, and then Krieg gives us a little, like, presentation.
Yes, of all the one known and the many rumored competitors in this design competition.
Yes, we know Hydro Gear is involved, and we know some people aren't because they dropped out.
Yeah. A lot of the firms that were interested in this, or like, seemed to be interested, went out of business.
Yeah. There's one called Lenco.
There's one called
Crydown.
Like Hydro Mecha.
Yeah.
Which was definitely a game for the Dreamcast. But the main player that's still in the game is run by a man named Enzo Donato.
Hydro Gear.
And Hydro Gear CEO Enzo Donato is played by Matt Landers, best known as the guy in charge of the SWAT team in Die Hard.
Oh.
Yeah.
How about that? I've never seen Die Hard.
There will be a familiar face when you do someday.
Yeah.
It's Bruce Willis. He's a very famous man.
I do know who Bruce Willis is. You're correct. I will be like, yeah.
There he is.
Yeah.
I know that guy.
I know that guy.
From Die Hard 3.
then Krieg, in his little PowerPoint presentation, mm-hmm. is like, and then there is Martin Tucker of Tucker Enterprises. And Lucas is like, oh my God, that's him.
Yes, yes.
That's the dreamer.
That's Fishing Man. That's our boat boy. Tucker's picture that gets thrown up on the wall looks like it should be on Dateline, while a voiceover says, he was such a quiet neighbor. I didn't believe it when the police came by.
And told us that he was eating people.
Yeah, it's one of those pictures.
Yeah.
It's messed up.
Yeah.
But yeah, he is an independent guy just working out of his shed in order to revolutionize the submarine industry.
But he used to work for Hydro Gear.
Yes.
And he
yes.
apparently made all of their biggest, most famous things.
He built that company.
He built that company. And Bridger, of course, knows him.
Uh-huh. Bridger knows everybody.
Because Bridger's like, you know, when I was designing the Sequest, he was like a year ahead of me on research, so I went to him to ask advice, and you know what he told me?
He was a big asshole.
He told me no.
Yeah, yeah.
And Lucas tries to, like, throw this back to Bridger of, like, well, you also told me the same thing, and he's like, no, you just asked me for money, and mm-hmm. I got you money. You didn't actually ask for help.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This episode feels like a sequel to an episode we didn't have.
Yes.
It, like, all the talk about what Bridger did and didn't do and right? the design phase in the building feels like a part one that never got filmed.
Yeah.
And the corporate espionage kidnapping is the part two that we actually have.
Yeah. Because there's this, like, slight, like, animosity type thing that's yeah. going on where it's like, we don't see any of this. We haven't experienced it.
And I think it would hit so much harder if I saw a like objective representation and we're now hearing people argue about it from their points of view.
Yeah.
And like, okay, here's what I said, but now in the stressful moments it comes out what I thought I said or what I meant you to take from it that you clearly didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not grounded in that because I don't have the objective case.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to piece it together from these snatches and snips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, maybe if it took place, like, 3 episodes from now, like it's supposed to, it would feel a little different. You have to wonder.
Yeah,
you have to wonder there. A Hummer, a very big Hummer.
Hummers are too big. Hummers are too... This is like a military-grade Hummer, not like your H2 idiot on the highway Hummer.
No, that's... The crazy ones. They show up to Tucker Technologies. Tucker is inside working on one of his vessel.
His vessel, his Stinger competitor, looks like 3/4 of a dolphin.
It's a dolphin that had its butt chopped off.
Yeah, yeah. Like, in these scenes, for most of the episode, I think, the tail section is ready to be bolted on later. That never happens.
No,
it just doesn't have
it's
one.
It's just not supposed to have a butt.
It's buttless.
And it's really weird because it looks like extremely like a dolphin.
Yes, it's painted like a dolphin. It has a face.
It looks like it had like the big like fish cleaver chop from The Little Mermaid. By like the chef.
Le
like,
poisson, as the French would say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. O'Neill knows about that. So is Lucas at this point, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They go inside, and these are dudes from Hydro Gear sent by the boss.
And they find Tucker underneath his craft with a yummy, yummy sandwich.
Mm-hmm. And they're like, we're here for Hydro Gear's property, and you, or including you, because...
Yeah.
He's apparently property.
There's a contract dispute in all of this.
Yes. Tucker spits his sandwich out on the dude.
Uh-huh. And starts really talking tough, right?
He yells at them for fire, like, you guys fired on the boy.
Mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm.
Like, how could you?
Yes.
Like, that's crazy.
Please do not kill children.
And this dude's like, well, you were out there spying on him. And he's like, yeah, but I didn't try to fucking kill him.
There's a difference, he shouts, as he picks up an iron bar to swing at these men.
Mm-hmm.
These men the oldest of them is still like 15 years younger than him.
Yes.
Like Tucker is past his peak, but his mind is still sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And so is his iron bar.
And so when he's swinging this bar around.
Just sneak up behind him. There's four of you.
The dude pulls out this like contraption, turns it on and throws it at him. It zaps him.
It's an electric yo-yo. He knocks him out with an electric yo-yo.
He's unconscious on the ground.
This is where Togashi got the idea.
So back on the Sequest, Ford is going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who he finds there? The only other person we ever see working out on this boat, Hitchcock.
It's true.
It's her only hobby.
Is lifting these spherical weights.
They're the weirdest fucking weight. They're like Mega Man hands.
I don't understand why you would have spherical weights on a moving craft. They're going to go places. You're going to get hit by a torpedo. They're going to fall off the rack and they're going to go places.
Yeah.
Get dumbbells. Even kettlebells have flat bottoms. It's something.
But it's the future.
It's the future. So we have very heavy spheres that we carve into, hollow out for the handles.
Yes.
It's ridiculous. I hate them.
She's very sweaty.
Yes.
And Ford makes a comment about like her, oh, you're still here. And she is not having this.
No.
She is very upset. And goes off at him of like, of course I'm still here. Why are you asking me that I'm still here? You can see that I'm still here. But really all this has to do with is that she is freaking out that they lost the sub.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they got all this money to build it and it's gone.
Yeah.
And
the trial is like tomorrow at this point or the day after tomorrow.
It's like 2 days away.
Yeah.
And Ford tries to like jokingly reassure her like, well, technically Lucas lost it, so, like, you're fine. And she's like, no, I was in charge. He's a child. I was in charge.
Ford has loosened up so much since he became the Predator that one time.
Yeah.
He's cracking jokes. He's reclining.
He's like, oh, well, Lucas doesn't really think you're in charge. And she goes off about something about that. And he makes some other joke about, like, yeah, and he needs a girlfriend. And she just loses it on him again. And what I love is Ford's just here, like, amused.
Yes.
He's just like, yes. I can't say anything to her.
Anytime anyone on this ship sees Katie Hitchcock just wound tighter than a clock, you know the only thing they can think is, her and Creed? How? Why?
Well, and I feel like they're all sitting there like, how are they both still alive? How did their marriage not result in them murdering each other?
Yeah, one of them Dateline specials, like Tucker's picture.
Like, Krieg on accident and her out of blind rage. So over at Hydro Gear, the Hummer arrives with Tucker, and they take him in, along with, you know, his version of the Stinger. Lucas's Stinger is also there. And Donato comes down as well.
Yes.
The head of Hydro Gear, and they have a back and forth for a while.
We learn a little bit about this contract dispute and how Donato's supposed legal claim over all of Tucker's designs in perpetuity.
And how, like, Tucker said, like, 5 years ago, this type of project was the future, and he was written off, and now, like, here we are, look at this, I was right. You know, it was basically like, if you're gonna compete, you're competing under our name. You're not gonna, like, compete under your own, and
which would mean at this point the trial is just one sub. Everyone else went out of business or got kidnapped.
Yes. And so Donato leaves, leaving him alone with the dude that kidnapped him, who we find out is like just the project manager.
That's why he didn't like just try to like go after him and like put him in a leg lock or something.
Mm-hmm.
He's a paper pusher. Why does he have a military Hummer? Just to intimidate, I guess?
Yes. And so Tucker is like talking a lot and walking towards his craft. And project manager dude is like, no, stop. Don't go by there. I'm not playing with you. Like, no. And he's like, you might not be playing with me, but I'm playing with you. I planned ahead, unlike you. As he puts like earplugs in and then hits a button on his boat, and a very loud alarm noise makes everyone crumble to the ground in pain, holding their heads.
Glass is shattering all over the construction floor in this sonic attack. At some point, Tucker insults someone by telling them to go back to, quote, watching digital comic books.
Oh, no. So he insults the project manager dude, and he says, did you learn to talk tough like that by watching digital comic books?
Right.
Yeah.
That's just movies, dude.
That's
movies.
That's
just movie. Or cartoons?
Or cartoons.
Are you talking about Batman, the animated series, airing on your competitor channel on a different time slot entirely?
Do they have some weird type of, like, book, like, digital you book open though, the and book, the like image moves around a bit you know, it does like a small little,
that sounds
like a it's basically like a gif that just moves for like 5 seconds.
That sounds like such a cheap idea that would be so expensive to make.
Yes.
And to like collect.
Yes, it would cost so much money.
That sounds awful.
Yeah,
a comic book is like what, $3.99, $4.99?
Depending.
And you can get a lot out of that. It doesn't need to move and jiggle. I don't need single-use digital displays.
And let's remember, this was being made when comic books were like a dollar still.
Yes.
Talking about the future. So I bet if we would see a digital, like, one of these comic books, it would be priced at $3.99.
You know, speaking of when this is coming out, though, do you think that this is a reaction to the overjuicing of the speculator bubble in the comic book industry? Is this a statement on all your metallic, lenticular, blind bag, cover variant, 12-issue number ones to just gas up the collector's market?
Was that a thing in 1993?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I was just reading my Archie comics then. I was not really in the know of the 1993 comic book world.
This is happening. The speculator boom is happening and about to explode.
Okay. I was just buying my Archies.
All right.
Yeah. I don't know what else was going on in comic book world. My, like, 500 Archie digests.
The industry, the publishers were trying to convince every reader that every comic book would become a huge collector's item.
I mean,
it's not a book, it's an investment.
The 90s were the peak time of claiming everything was going to be a collector's item.
Right.
The 90s was just obsessed with that. It's why I have unopened Barbies I wasn't allowed to play with.
And this started with, like, comic book sales at auction. A number of them got huge totals, which made huge news. Mm-hmm. And then people started buying them up, and then the publishers started responding to that. Now, the reason that comic books that are valuable is because there's only so many of them.
Yeah, they're rare.
When you're printing 5 million... When you're printing them by the boatload and people are buying up 20, that's never going to be rare.
No.
There were very predictable results in the long term for the comic book industry.
Yeah. The 90s really did have like a really crazy collector thing. Just between like, again, the holiday Barbies that every child would get and like, there was a major amount of people that were like, no, you don't open that. That goes on a shelf. Money someday. Beanie Babies and shit. Like, my God. You know what? I don't want any of that stuff. I don't need any of that stuff. So Tucker, when they're all withering in pain on the floor, leaves. He just straight up leaves. Doesn't, like, I don't know, blow up his ship or dismantle it so they can't use it or anything. He just leaves.
Well, he's a long-term thinker. He's five steps ahead. He knows something is going to happen to put him back in that boat.
I guess. But I don't know, unplug a spark plug they don't know about or something.
Like... There we go. There's the ticket, yeah.
So, on Sequest, Krieg is talking to one of his contacts.
It's Bickle. Bickle's back. We've seen Bickle.
I wrote it as Pickle in my notes.
That might be an autocorrect thing.
He is asking for information on orders from Tucker.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because Tucker has ordered many a things. And he's like, I just, need you to pull those and see what he's ordered. And he's like, oh, yeah, I got an order from him for a bunch of fake barracudas.
Apparently, Tucker will buy anything and everything.
Yeah. Apparently, Bickle is Amazon.
Well,
if you want it, he has it.
The thing about Krieg's contacts is all of them are weirder than him. And Bickle's thing is he hates his wife so much.
Yes, he does.
Why do you hate your wife so much? Everything he says is about how much he hates his fucking wife. Can you believe it?
Mm-hmm. So, Krieg is like, hey, well, if you got those orders, I bet you can get an address for me off of them. And he's like, oh, yeah, here you go. Totally, like, not a breach of confidence or anything. You know, it's fine.
And he's in Oxnard, which is in Southern California, and not, how it sounds, mid-Nebraska. Oxnard is not a Southern California kind of word.
So, at Hydro Gear, the... he was a production manager, not
sure,
a project manager,
sure.
But like, man, he's talking to the boss, dude, and the boss is like, you let him get away, you should have taken him out, and he's like, I'm not a killer, I'm just a production manager! Back on Sequest, Krieg lets Bridger know that he's found Tucker, and he's like, oh great, where is he? About a half hour from here.
How convenient!
Convenient, but also like... You're in the middle of the water.
Well, no, they're off the California coast, apparently.
Apparently, but I'm also like, don't you have to be like, I don't know, far enough out for your giant ass sub? I feel like it would take more than half an hour.
They were far enough away from the pirate island that it took hours for the sea launch to get there and back.
Mm-hmm.
They are practically docked to get to Oxnard in half an
hour. I'm like, you have to get off your boat in a shuttle, then a car, to go to Oxnard.
Do they have a helicopter? A helichopper boy?
I mean, they have to call one. It's not like they keep one on board. So Bridger's like, great, have Crocker send over a team.
A team for one cranky scientist.
Yes. Oh, and before we left the production manager, dude, he called someone, mysterious stranger, and was like, we have a problem.
You know this guy means business because he's in a turtleneck with a blazer.
And this is important because in this next scene, that dude shows up to Tucker, and he's like, hey, I got a gun.
That's basically the line, hey, I got a gun.
And I'm going to shoot you. And before he can do anything, though, Crocker comes in. And...
with like 40 dudes.
Yeah, and they all got guns. But yeah, so like all these dudes pop out with guns. And so then they go to Hydro Gear.
Because they're here on the belief that Tucker stole like the Stinger.
Yes.
That Tucker tried to kill Lucas. Instead, they find Tucker about to be assassinated by his boss.
And so they're like, you're going to take us. To your boss.
Yeah, Crocker just calls an audible and is like, okay, who's the real bad guy? I want to find a bad guy.
So over at Hydro Gear, where all this is happening, Donato orders them to cannibalize the Stinger for the tech. So they laser it the fuck apart.
Their laser cutter prop is clearly built from a nail gun.
Yeah.
But I like it. Yeah. It's good.
So that is all happening before Crocker and his team can get there. But they do get there, and they use this crazy thing that bashes in the door.
Yeah?
It, like, punches the door handle and, like, a 6-inch radius just off the door.
I was so distracted by how much I still do not buy... Chief Crocker as a tough guy action man.
Yeah.
Anytime he has to like be intimidating and like kick ass, it's just not him. I don't see it.
He just orders it around.
He needs to bust more ghosts. I believe him as a superstitious weirdo.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So someone, it was like a tube thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of bounced on the door, and suddenly just like a giant piece of the door was missing. So they were able to push it open. And when they go in, everyone takes off running, including production manager guy. And what I love is as he's like running down this like, you know, gangway, two of the security guys pop out, and one has a gun and the other one is one of the guys from an earlier episode. It's like the really big guy.
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
just crosses his arm and looks at him. I was like, where's your gun?
Yeah.
He doesn't need a gun. He has guns of steel in his arms.
Is that going to protect him from an electric yo-yo? We'll never find out. He doesn't go for the yo-yo.
It would, because he'd be like, it tickles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's that tough.
He's so tough.
Mm-hmm.
You can't yo-yo this man.
So Crocker calls Sequest and he's like, hey, the Stinger is gone.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
it wasn't Tucker. It was Donato.
And it's in itty bitty bits.
Yep. And Lucas and Hitchcock are at lunch, and they are arguing about, is it a gazelle? Is it a stinger? I'm not calling it a gazelle.
They're also arguing about the cause of the failure, and like, he got shot by an underwater tank.
Yeah.
You know what went wrong? He was shot by a tank.
Yeah.
Neither of you screwed this up.
Yeah. Nothing happened.
The cause is no longer mysterious.
But as they are arguing, Hitchcock refers to the Stinger name as being sexist.
Mm-hmm. You know what's really sexist?
Mm-hmm.
20% of the cast at most is women. Ever.
Yeah.
I think maybe the most women we had on the show was, like, proportionally, was Bad Water. When the two guests were, like, the French teacher tour guides.
Oh, I think we get more later on. I think there's a lot of background women, but
sure,
yeah. We do have, like, a lack of main cast women.
Yeah, and again, our main cast women are 2 out of 9.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll say in, like, season 3, we end up with... it's still, like, 3. It's still 3. Our ratio is, like, always 3. I thought for a second it was 4, and then I was like, no, it's 3.
No.
Yeah, and then the one dies.
Yeah!
Spoilers. Bridger comes in as they're, again, arguing about the name, and he's like, maybe you should call it Gone.
Yeah.
And they're like, what?
He has so little sympathy for this project.
He explains, and then he's like, so what are you guys gonna do about it? You got 24 hours. I guess you got to build another one. And they're like, what? He's like, well, that or, like, practice your juggling. You got to deliver something.
And he tells him, you've got your designs, you've got the parts, and anything you don't have lying around, Krieg can get you. Krieg gets such incredible express shipping, but you don't want to meet the guy that drops it off. The weirdest one of all.
So Krieg calls Mr. Pickle again.
I think it's interesting, and I would say incorrect. I would prefer if this weren't true, that Krieg also calls it the Stinger. Hitchcock is all alone on this.
She is. Everyone calls it the Stinger.
And I think it would be so nice if Krieg called it the Gazelle.
At least, like, just when Katie's around or something?
No, to Mr. Pickle,
to him.
Even.
Oh, just yes. to him? And like, oh, the Gazelle?
I think Krieg should call it the Gazelle. I think he should be on his ex-wife's side when literally no one in the world is.
The Stinger's a better name, though.
Gazelle, no one in the world.
Gazelles aren't in the water.
Well, Stingers are on wasps.
And stingrays.
And stingrays. That's true.
Yeah. But there are many things that they are on.
The point she makes is that it is a very aggressive, penetrating even name, which makes it a man name for man things. Whereas gazelles are graceful and speedy, yet they are not aquatic. This is undeniably true.
That's my problem with it. It's not aquatic. If you were making a really fast car, sure, but it's a boat.
It's a boat. You want a wet thing. Or a thing that's a creature at all.
If she was arguing to call it the Barracuda,
yeah,
I'd be like, yeah, call it the Barracuda. It's fucking terrifying.
It's already got a built-in theme
Those
song.
Those things are so fucking fast.
Yeah.
It would make sense.
They got tails that do that.
Yeah.
Gazelles don't do that.
It should be, and she should be like, it looks like a fucking Barracuda. Let's call it that.
Stingers don't do that tail thing either.
Stingrays, they kind of do. They wiggle around. Bloop, 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 bloop. Bloop, bloop, bloop. So Krieg, again, calls Pickle. I'm going to call him Pickle. I like his name as Pickle.
Yeah.
And states all the things they need. And he's all like, oh, what are you building? And he's like, a big fish. Let's go with that. He's like, oh, well, you're going to owe me. And he's like, well, I'll get you, you know, a number for a great divorce lawyer. Because you hate your wife so much. He's like, oh yeah, some lawyer, you gotta salute your ex-wife.
And Krieg gives a little, you got me face. Yeah.
So then we get a working on the stinger montage.
Yes!
Everyone's helping.
In this montage, we see the thing that bothers me most about this episode.
Yes, I even have a note about it because it's annoying.
I've been complaining about this for years.
Yeah.
So like we just said, the thing that sets the stinger apart from all other submersibles...
It got a wiggle butt.
...is that its tail moves like that of a marlin or some other large, powerful fish, which provides laminar flow and all of these advantages to swim like the fishes do, follow evolution's plan for how we get through water efficiently.
Not like a gazelle.
Unlike a gazelle. That would be more leaping, I guess.
See?
The first thing we see of the stinger under construction is a full, rigid, aluminum frame that goes the entire length from toe to tip, completely immobile and solid. They are clearly building the stinger prop, not the actual stinger we see in fiction, whose digital model does the tail wobblies when it's free swimming. It frustrates me so much.
If they just wouldn't have put, like, the back half of the cage they could have gotten away with this. Could be like, yes, that is the structure that, like, Lucas sits inside, and then the back half is what moves.
Or put some joints on it, some hinges.
It's very frustrating.
Ah.
But montage, so we're welding shit, Ford's lifting heavy things.
Oh, yeah, and his undershirt, and he's all sweaty and hot.
And Krieg's observing and getting in the way and being given dirty looks. Ortiz is got the job of, like, caressing the spray paint gun.
Yeah, he does the most important part. He's got the paint gun.
I just the big airbrush. I love his airbrush, like, hands.
Yes.
And how it's just guiding it. And it's very, like, method.
And in the middle of this montage, like, around the mid stages, old man comes in and he says, hey, can I get you anything? Can I do anything for you? You need an extra pair of hands. And Lucas, in his pride, says, nay, false father. There is no place for you in my realm.
I've done it all on my own. And then he shoots him a look and looks at Katie. And he's like, I mean, we have.
We. The diumvirate. Not triumvirate. No. Diumvirate.
And so Bridger is sent away. And they continue to work and finish it off.
Not like he's a world-renowned expert in the field or anything.
He doesn't want to ride on his papa's coattails. So then, like, it's much later. It's dark. It's definitely, like, the night has gone on.
Mm-hmm.
And we see Bridger come back into the area in his robe. And Lucas is asleep inside the finished stinger.
This is what makes the episode. This is, like, one of the defining images of all, like, 58 episodes of Sequest. Is Lucas having fallen asleep inside the cockpit of their hastily built prototype.
Yes. And Bridger coming and looking in on him and seeing this one last decal that hasn't been pulled off, and he pulls it off and it says Lucas Wallen check on it. And he's just like, good job, kiddo.
And
looks on proudly and walks out.
It's this moment of like, yes, now you have become a man. I feel like Bridger's probably feeling left out and maybe even a little hurt that he wasn't allowed to be, that he wasn't invited to be part of this.
Mm-hmm. But also, there's definitely like a part of it where, I mean, Lucas has taken this thing on.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
he, you know, him and Hitchcock.
Yes.
Like, he has worked with her, and he's worked on this big project, and, like...
An incredible pride.
Yes. Like, so it's this, you know, double-sided thing here.
Yes, yes.
It's just, it's good. It's mm-hmm. just so, like, gets right at your heart.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. And as Lucas dreams, we hear his dreams.
We get some voiceover announcement of the Underwater 500.
And young Lucas Wallencheck, the rookie from Buffalo.
Yeah, he's from Buffalo.
We can add that to the wiki. Lucas is from Buffalo.
That has been on the wiki.
Yeah.
Everyone knows.
Has it been on the show up to this point?
I don't know, but I know this.
Well, yeah, you watched this in 1993. You're at an advantage. I think this is our first confirmation, in air date order at least, that Lucas hails from Buffalo.
Maybe.
Anyhow, there's a lot of dirt bike noises in this radio broadcast of his dreams.
You gotta rev your stingers.
For a submarine race, it's a
rev
lot
it up.
Of dirt bike noises.
Get it ready to go. And so the morning, mm-hmm, a little while mm-hmm. later, everyone's on the bridge, and we are getting ready for the test, because apparently this competition is just taking place on the Sequest. And the Sequest is in charge of, like, monitoring it all. And I'm kind of like, oh, wow, this explains why, like, other people were upset that the Sequest was involved in the competition that was for the private sector. It's because they're also, like, monitoring the damn competition.
Looks like a little bit of a conflict of interest. Some possible unfair advantages happening. Lucas is looking like a bobblehead in his crash helmet inside the Stinger.
I love that they made him wear a helmet now.
Well, last time he drove the thing, he could have died.
Yeah.
He got a cut on his face. Those are deadly.
Noyce is there, and a whole bunch of politicians and funders are on the bridge, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Noyce does introduce, like, oh, this is my assistant secretary. And he's like, ah, yes, the man who wouldn't let me talk to you. And he's like, oh, he's temporary. Don't worry about it. Fuck you.
Bridger just got a guy fired in front of him.
Yeah, he did. It was kind of good.
Something that I realized when we're ready for this test pilot test. Nobody in this cast is built up as an especially good pilot of all these craft. It's just not a skill that anyone has been known for yet.
This becomes a thing, though, later on.
Yes.
About being, like, a pilot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is it's not, like, you're not doing stunts in a sea crab. It's just not what the tools are for, and so it's not what the stories are built around. So it's not like, oh yeah, Ford is not only a really good, you know, first officer, he's also just a demon behind the wheel of the sea mm-hmm. launch. That's never mattered. So we don't know if any of these people are especially, like, skilled at this kind of thing.
Which I think is why they can get away with having Lucas
drive
it, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if they did have that, I feel like they could have had him build it. But mm-hmm, it wouldn't mm-hmm. have made sense for him
but
to
he
pilot
would've,
it.
Yeah, pass it off to Ortiz or whoever.
Yeah.
Or Hitchcock. I mean, mm-hmm. she drives the HR probe. She could drive the Stinger.
Yeah. But in this case, like, because they don't have that mentality, it's like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that it's an unclaimed skill that's up for grabs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, so as like stuff's getting ready, oh gosh, Noyce is like, oh, is Lucas safe out there in this? And Hitchcock's like, oh yeah, we've been doing around the clock tests. Everything's great. It's wonderful. And Wes Phelan's just like, around the clock. You guys just stopped building it like 2 minutes ago. It just gives her like the dirtiest look. Because that's her baby boy out there.
And of course, this is a test for two. Tucker is there in his capsule that looks so unstable without a tail. It just looks wrong.
But so it's time for the test. And they have a whole bunch of specific moves that they're supposed to do. And right before they start on stuff, Darwin swims by to, like, wish Lucas good luck.
Yeah.
And they, you know, go do all their stuff. So they're doing, like, some flips and they're doing some turns and all these different moves. And then it is finally time for the 10-mile speed test.
It's basically a straight up drag race, and you know they're
and a whisker is used as a traffic light.
Yeah. when normally it's some like Instagram model like pulling her bra off and dropping it.
But yeah,
that's what I've learned from my favorite film franchise. At least. They go and go. We're watching them jockey for position. Lucas gets a hot tip to draft for a while when he's falling behind at the 2 mile mark. We keep cutting to people watching screens on the Sequest as their little blips move toward the left with big numbers over them.
Yeah.
We're going above 150, 160 of unstated units.
And Lucas like pulls ahead a bit, but then just as we're getting towards the end, the Stinger starts, like, puttering, and it putters out, and he loses thrust, and Tucker pulls ahead and wins it. And by the time Lucas is getting actually to the finish, Darwin swims ahead of him.
Which is so insulting. Darwin's a jerk.
And the laugh that Tucker has when he wins. Oh my god.
What's a more amazing noise? Tucker's victory laugh or Lucas's screams of terror?
Oh,
that's a hard
choice.
That's
a hard choice. I don't know if I could pick.
You think if they came clean, they could get bonus points for building the Stinger overnight?
They should tell them that. Like, hey, we just, like, rebuilt this thing.
I think that proves it's ready for production at scale. They streamline the construction process.
I also will just point out a little bit that I'm like, okay, Bridger, great for encouraging, but I'm a little like, why did you tell them the only option was to like basically rebuild this in 24 hours when it's like, hey, you were shot at,
yes,
it was
sabotaged,
stolen, and then it was torn up by those that stole it.
As the French would say.
I think they get a pass. On the money disappearing.
The only one passing is Tucker in the final stretch. And also passing the test with flying colors.
Back on the Sequest, they're having like their cocktail hour celebration on the bridge. Everyone, well, Hitchcock and Lucas are pretty down. Lucas sitting by the moon pool.
He's moody.
With Darwin.
He was crying. In the cockpit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was devastating.
So Wes Phelan comes up to him and is all like, oh, you should be so proud. And he's like, I lost. And Tucker comes up and he's like, you know, if you think winning is everything, you know, you're wrong. And like, don't give up. You got a great future ahead of you.
Of all the weirdos that represent possible Lucas futures, Tucker is the best one.
Yeah.
Like the best possible outcome we've seen so far.
Of like, you could turn into him?
Yes, yes. But the one he's least drawn to.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I would much rather have Lucas follow the Tucker path than the Regulator or Tuvok.
But
he loves those guys, and Tucker he treats like dirt.
But the Regulator has such fashion.
Tucker saved his life.
Yeah. It's a little too close to home for him, I think. He's like, I might be a dreamer, but I'm not that dreamer.
It's because he's bald, isn't it? That's what it is.
Lucas doesn't think he's sexy. He's like, I don't want to be that.
What do you think is under that hat, Lucas? What do you think is under the Regulator's hat? All that long hair is just coming around the rim. There's nothing in the center.
And so Bridger, though, is like, hey, Lucas, congratulations.
Yeah.
Be polite here. And so, you know, he does the whole congrats, he built a great fish type thing. Or Tucker says to Lucas and Hitchcock, like, oh, be sure to, like, check this one thing. And turns to Bridger, like, I can't believe you didn't see that. And he's like, oh, I did. And they're like, what? Bridger saw the thing that made, like, saw the tech problem that made it putter out and didn't tell them. And he's like, you guys didn't want my help. I gave you all the material, all the reading I had, the research.
And they didn't read it.
It was in there.
You gotta do the reading. You gotta do the reading! Which I think is a great, like, Lucas mistake. But Hitchcock built the hyper-reality probe. She's head engineer of the Sequest, the motherfucking Sequest.
Maybe they needed to communicate a little bit more amongst themselves about who was reading that. And so Lucas is like, you can call it the Gazelle Commander. It's okay. And that's the end of the episode.
That's the end of the episode, except for a Bob fact.
Bob facts!
Bob Ballard of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute tells us that Tucker's capsule is based on a submarine called Vash. They are stampeding near you. And it is ready to revolutionize the ocean in the near future. Also, fishtails reduce turbulence and therefore energy used to swim. Isn't that nice? He believes that one day there will be a stinger.
Ooh.
So this is not my Bob fact.
No.
This is supplementing Bob's Bob fact.
Okay.
VASH stands for Variable Attitude Submersible Hydrofoil.
Okay.
You can also find the original VASH under the name Bionic Dolphin. It is built by two hobbyists in a shed.
Oh my god, look at that. That's amazing.
So you can see even down to the painted dolphin face.
Yeah.
And the no tail just like chopped off at the butt.
Oh my god.
Like one of these guys is just like a business executive and one I think is like...
I love this website too.
One is a glass sculptor. Like these are not submersible engineers, but they built one.
That's crazy.
Their designs were bought out by a company of experts. And the design successor is the Innispace Sea Breacher.
Honestly, doesn't look as cool.
That is spelt either with or without a space in Sea Breacher.
Oh, these are painted better. Why is it in the air?
Because that's what it does. You go really fast and you breach.
Oh!
You pop out and you fly.
That feels like it would hurt.
Let's take a look at the Sea Breacher Z, the Z model. Look at that thing go. People are having a grand old time in there. Painting it like all sorts of ocean creatures.
I feel like if you're going to do all these things, you do need a helmet. These are too many out of water things.
Anyhow, darling, do you have a Bob fact?
I do. We're going to talk about stingrays and how they breathe.
Okay. Okay.
So stingrays have two separate ways to take in water to use as oxygen.
Sure.
Okay, so most of the time they take it in... I knew you were already not going to like this. You just don't like thinking about stingrays.
I don't like thinking about gills. I don't like thinking about the ways they open. Okay, here's a thing that is important to know about me regarding many of our fine friends in the ocean.
I love them.
I have some sort of pathologic response to creatures that you can see the inside of from the outside.
He just can't handle it.
I can't handle it.
He starts getting all this, whatever this is. I don't even know what this is.
So how do they breathe? What are the two methods of respiration for sea friends?
Okay, so most of the time they take water in through their mouths and then send the water through their gills.
Yes.
You know, for the exchange.
I've heard of this. Okay? This is normal.
Okay. So, but when hunting, they switch to using their spiracles.
Their spiracles?
Spiracles. Those are the small openings that some fish and amphibians have to breathe, and theirs are the ones that are right behind the eyes.
Okay.
And, you know, they will use those. They are, though, like, less efficient mm-hmm. than using their mouth.
Right.
Because they can't pull in the same amount of water. So it's typically when they are burrowing in the sand, waiting for prey, and mm-hmm, they can't mm-hmm. use their mouth because they'll get sand.
Right,
they're using
right.
their little eye, the spiracles by their eyes.
As they lie in ambush.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for that Bob fact.
It's less gross than you thought.
Sure.
Let's go look at jellyfish.
Oh, I don't want to look at jellyfish. I want to tell you my Bob fact.
I mentioned them.
I want to talk about my Bob fact.
Okay, what's your Bob fact? Is it about gazelles?
Yes. My Bob fact is about gazelles because I am not a sexist.
I'm not sexist. I just think it should be a water creature. Or related to one.
There are 10 species of gazelle. They are capable of sprinting up to 60 miles an hour.
Stingers can go faster.
Arabic love poetry often involves comparing the beloved to a gazelle.
Mm.
In fact, the Arabic word for love poetry is ghazal.
Oh.
So, there you go.
Okay.
One of many reasons.
You know.
Krieg. Should call it the gazelle because in his heart, his love is pure.
I was like, so is there a thing here with Krieg, like, writing Hitchcock, like, Arabic love poems?
Mm-hmm.
In that case, though, she shouldn't want it to have anything named close by. Oh, you know what should happen?
What should happen?
Krieg should tell her that.
Yeah.
Be like, did you know that's what all my love poems were called? And it's named after the gazelle. And then she could be like, we can call it the stinger.
There you go.
It's fine.
That's a
stinger.
That's a much better joke than it sucks. You can have it.
It would have been I don't so like good. That. It would have been so good for Krieg to ruin it for her. Oh, and they could have spent the whole episode with Krieg thinking this was some type of like signal to him that like she was interested again. And so when he finally approaches her and like, well, you know, because you want it's the gazelle and my Arabic love poems and da 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 da. And then she's like, no.
I think it is interesting that this is what the fourth Sakmar and Leonard script.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one that doesn't have a real Krieg and Hitchcock scene. They are both heavily featured, but on parallel tracks.
Yeah, the only time they're really together is when she gives him the stink eye.
Yeah, yeah. They as a pair are usually so highlighted in the Leonard Sakmar stories.
What if Ford's scene in gym was originally supposed to be Krieg?
I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, like, without that, Ford has nothing this week.
Pretty much.
Like, he shows up in the montage, he's doing his functional bridge things, but that's like his meaty scene.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
I like this episode. There's just a lot. It's fun also seeing, like, I don't know, like, I like the Lucas Hitchcock pair up and, like, the bickering and,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Again, Sassy Bridger. Love me, Sassy Bridger.
I want to like an episode that tries to work with Hitchcock, who has the least going on of the cast still. But the way it ends, the way it resolves, like, you missed a very important detail that was right in front of you. I think it betrays both her position and skills on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And one of her strongest character traits, which is how, like, tightly focused and detail-oriented and tightly wound she is. She should have been, like, poring over those to the point, like, it drove her crazy. And, like, her lesson is, but you gotta feel the soul of the ship. You're never gonna find that in my documents. I'm sorry to say. You gotta get that from life.
I can see it all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I can see all that. I do still like this episode. I just do.
It's likable. It's got a lot of likable points. There's, I'm never going to say an episode is bad when it has that bit of Lucas falling asleep in the cockpit.
It's so good.
That's the thing. That's
it's so
the
good.
Thing.
It's such a good moment. It is used in every single fan video ever.
Oh, yes. And it deserves it.
And it deserves it.
You know, I'm going to try to keep this in the back of my mind, but I bet it's the best, like, wordless 5 seconds in Sequest.
It might be.
It's a contender. Easy contender. Yeah. It might be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I think that's all we have for today.
I think so. So, you guys should all, you know, leave us a rating and review.
You should, because if you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, I'm going to read it, and I don't have a more recent one than the one we did last week.
That's sad.
It's been a long time since that's been true.
It's
but
sad in my heart, y'all.
It's true again. So
gonna make me cry, just like Lucas on the stinger.
It's time to race to be the first to be read again. Are you gonna be a Tucker, or are you gonna limp across the finish line with a oil sludge? Lucas pollutes the ocean in this episode.
He has some exhaust problems.
There's some leakage as he goes across the line.
Yeah. You can also tell a friend.
Don't leak on your friends.
Okay.
you shouldn't spit your half-chewed sandwich on your enemies either.
Also,
but
follow
it's cool.
us on Blue Sky at Whiskers.
We're having a great, great time
over
there.
Yeah. So do that instead of spitting on your friends or enemies.
Just swing iron bars at them.
Much better. Much better. They can see it coming. At least they know where you stand. Yeah.
In the path of their electric yo-yos.
Yeah. So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant. And in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.